one, two.
I respond much better to that.
This is week two of our conversation surrounding suffering. And I'm going to start this morning before we do our kind of our review of last week. You know, what have been some of your thoughts this week? I know this is percolating in my mind this week, but maybe some things that you've thought about regarding the idea of suffering. And it could be physical, mental, and there's a lot of ways to suffer. So maybe some things that have kind of stuck in your mind this week.
Like, when you share and you do all the time, you're like, oh, but it's going to get better. Things are probably, like, other people want to minimize it because other people are uncomfortable thinking that you are separating, so they want to appease themselves by minimizing their suffering, which then causes you to withdraw even more, and causes you in the future to not want to open. At least in my life, there are certain things that I've definitely stopped talking about because I got tired of people thinking they were helping, but they were just minimizing and not actually seeing me.
I don't know about you, but that wasn't like a conversation in my family about the idea of suffering. But it's where we're all headed in some way or another. Maybe we're there now. How's that going? Nolan?
Just to build on that same thing, there was nothing in life, at least in my growing up, there was so much gatekeeping around with suffering. It's like, oh, you think you got it bad, so what, so does everybody else, you know? And it was like, more like, what does that bring? Like, so what, you're suffering, that's life.
Right.
Yeah, suck it up, rub some dirt on it, walk it off, you know, that it was just, that's how you dealt with it. Like, it wasn't, you couldn't engage it if you weren't allowed to, like, no one would let you. I think, again, to touch on one just went there, because it's like, it's too uncomfortable, it's too much.
Yeah.
Once you open that AM, right?
Sure. Yeah, we don't talk about that around here. Suck it up, buttercup. That's kind of my favorite. I think Marty had a comment. Misunderstanding, like, you don't, just shh, be quiet. You have no idea what I'm dealing with right now. Right? And maybe it's just that place of you just need to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of want to tell you just a little bit, is that it's a topic that we have not talked about, like yet. We have not talked about it, especially in our Western world. I don't know about your family growing up, but that we just don't talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, I think you mentioned society is getting better and whatnot. I think we can't talk about this in this context without talking about some of the biggest gatekeepers have been the religious groups and churches. I think about two times in my adult life when I was in the midst of my biggest suffering. One, my diagnosis in 2008, and trying to go to my church, who I adored. And he shut down and saying, it's really depressing, you can't even talk about it. I think about what that was in the depths of his suicide ideation. And literally I was told by the church, please stop asking for prayers about that. We don't want to talk about it anymore. And, you know, and so when it caused us to leave that church, I mean, truthfully both churches, it did huge damage because if we can't come to our Christian family and say, I can't bear this alone. And so many times when I've talked to people who have left the faith, it has been at a time of burden and they were shut down by the churches. So I do think that society is getting better because they're getting educated. I think in our churches, East County is a unique place, but there's a lot of people that have mental health or in the mental health industry. But as a whole, churches do not want to talk about this. And we see some of the biggest gatekeepers, and people are dying because of it.
Yeah. And I wonder if those comments, like, let's not talk about this, don't come from a place of not caring, but of just not knowing how to handle this. And so let's put the kibosh on it right now because we don't want it to go any further. Because it might be causing damage, but we still don't know how to deal with it. I think that's one of the bigger problems, I think, with suffering. Karen?
One quick note.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have a name. I have a name. My shepherd. Suffering leads to deconstruction.
Suffering leads to deconstruction. That's you on that one.
I think there's a level of suffering that is very intimate. And people who aren't close to you, they have a hard time because they don't know you well enough to be intimate with you. I think there's a level of suffering that's public, but there's also another level where it's very, very intimate too.
Yeah, Tolstoy's Death of Ivan Illich, his house servant, or whatever you want to call him, rubbed his feet. How much more intimate can that become, or be, other than rubbing someone's feet while they suffer? Pete?
Yeah, I just want to echo that. Very important, it goes back to Melinda's earlier comment, that it's maybe that is the right answer sometimes. Everything's going to be okay, but it has to come from relationship. And you have to have earned connection.
Right.
And even then, it may be the right statement in the moment. But you know, I just pointed out that connection is the possibility of being able to be there for someone, and often it's just presence.
Yes.
Right? Oh, the other thing I was going to say was, the wanting to say something is from our anxiety. And you're right, it may come from hearing, but we're anxious about what's out of our control, and we look for ways to try to find some control
right
in the moment. And especially if the person I care about isn't feeling
And really, we are a fix-it culture, aren't we? Our Western culture is just, well, let's fix it, let's build it, it's broken, let's fix it, that type of thing. I do want to share, I like the idea of intimacy in suffering. Every Thursday, John Wolfgang and Brett Wilson come over to my house, and you know, Brett's dealing with multiple myeloma, just had a T-cell transplant. And John's out of town, he's doing this Disneyland thing right now. So for him, Seth's loading it up. But this past week, Brett came over on Friday because we had some issues with schedule.
Just like.
Yeah. But there is a connection. When he walks into my house, that dude, I know just by your walk how you're feeling. And we go out in the backyard, and we had the heater on, it was a little cool. We just sat there, drink coffee and talk, and you know, we're talking, you know, politics, we're talking music. But there comes a period of time, it's really weird, where no conversation takes place at all. And we sit in silence, and it's an intimate silence. And then he'll say, "Tell me how you're doing." And right when he does that, it just gets expansive. And it gets really, really palpable, the intimacy, the shared suffering. I've never really experienced that notion of shared suffering, but I feel it when he's telling me how he's feeling and what he's dealing with. And I think sometimes the most important thing is to sit with someone, right? Lewis, sometimes you probably just go sit at a bedside. And just being present, or maybe it's just tapping their hand, holding their hand. Nothing needs to be said. Okay, one a little longer than that I wanted. But this morning I was going over my notes, and Julie was in the living room with me, and I just said, "Hey, what are your thoughts about suffering?" And about class, of course, and how I'm sure it worked. But she said, "You know, Bill, it's not new," and I'm paraphrasing, "this isn't a new topic." And the second thing she said to me that really struck is there's no answer. There's really no answer of the right way or the wrong way to suffer or to suffer with someone who's suffering. It's so individual. If you think about our individual DNA, how we're wired, each situation is going to be uniquely different. And I think we have to allow ourselves to just listen, take in the suffering, and maybe kind of get your mind around what this person's actually dealing with before something bad comes out of your mouth. She's like, she's applying that to other things.
It's a lot of years in marriage.
But, you know, last week, you know, the death of Ivan Illich. Ivan is a lawyer, or he's a judge. He has a well-to-do job. He gets sick because he has this accident in the house. And he's dying. He's dying slowly. And so in that story, there's some themes that come out. And here are a few of them. Denial of death increases suffering. The denial of death increases suffering. And I think that's the point in our lives where you just say, okay, this is where we're going. Now, how am I going to deal with it? Because I think the roadblock in my life is not accepting it, saying things are going to get better. Authenticity over convention. Like I said, Ivan had the right house, he had the right job, he had the right wife, he had everything lined up. And it actually took away of some of his authenticity of life. Because he was living in this fake world, which he never realized until he started suffering. Isn't that interesting? How in the depths of suffering, the lenses get really big and clear. And you process things in interesting ways. Death and suffering give meaning to life. Someone told me one time, "You never feel more alive than you do when you're suffering." It's almost a Zen moment. And I hear that from people that are really avid climbers. When they're looking for that next handhold is all that matters. And in suffering, you are so attuned to your body, to even your respiration, how you breathe, your size, the world around you, and the people that are closest to you, things that you've lived with your whole life that you never paid attention to. I know my wife's scent. When she hugs me, she smells like Julie. And I would think about those things. She would come in the room and either talk to me or hug me or whatever. And I would dial in. I was just hypersensitive to my senses. And so I think suffering is a path to self-realization. Not a path you choose, but it can be a path to self-realization. What's important? And that's kind of the village, that's kind of his conversation, is he is realizing. He's realizing what life has been, maybe what it should have been like, but it wasn't, but that's okay. Poor guy eventually, he dies. That's his life. Okay, today I wanted to take a few minutes on the idea of biblical suffering. And biblical suffering is really a central and complex theme that spans both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And it's explored in various ways. Sometimes it's seen through punishment, sometimes as a test, and other times as a path to deeper faith or even redemption. I grew up with these stories and they shaped me. It shaped my idea, my theology of suffering, suffering and death. Suffering in the Bible can be seen as a consequence of sin. Genesis 3 introduces the idea of, the consequence of eating from the tree. Poor Eve now has to suffer in childbirth to bring forth life. Adam, he's got to pull weeds now. He's got to sweat and toil over the land. That was a consequence of their sin. Throughout the Old Testament, suffering is often tied to covenant. In Deuteronomy 28, I just want to read this. It's not anything spectacular. When was the last time you picked your Bible up?
I was just going to say.
You guys remember that?
Yeah.
Deuteronomy 28, the idea of covenant, what happens when you break covenant? When you do what the Lord wants to do, the Lord will grant the enemies who rise up against you to be defeated before you. They will come at you from one direction, but flee from you in seven different directions. You break that covenant, the Lord will then close your storehouses. The Lord will remove his bounty. He will no longer send rain to your land. He will no longer bless all the work of your hands. He will make life miserable for you. Hold that thought. The theology builds, doesn't it? From Genesis, we're in Deuteronomy, and it builds and it builds and it builds. And then in Romans, we read where God gave them over to their sinful desires. So there's choice. There's choice in breaking covenant. And then the consequence is what? Death, suffering, miserable lives. So how does that shape, think about that, this for just a minute, how has this shaped, if you grew up in the church, how has this shaped your own theology about God and suffering and all of that? One, there's a reason, right? There's got to be a reason because I broke covenant. There's got to be a reason because, I don't know, I said a bad word. Right? And two, some of my twisted theology is you better stay on God's good side. You better sort it out and stay on that good side. So I live in this kind of this dualistic world. I'm in. I'm out. I'm in. I'm out again. And you live this psychotic life of trying to make sure everything's lined up because you don't want to break covenant. You don't want to experience death. You don't want to experience suffering, etc. Comments? Anything jump out at you? Any? Where's Seth when you need him?
Disneyland.
Oh, yeah, nothing personal.
Princesses. There's a lot of folks that are my generation that grew up in the church, as we say, or in church of Christ. And they have left because they grew up being taught that you are a piece of garbage and that you, that's the only way that you can be a delightful human being is to have Jesus like in your life. So you're terrible unless you have this. So it's like an if-then situation, and that's not necessarily at all how I think it works. And so there's that, when you're taught that black and white, which you see polka dots, it's not going to be something that you necessarily buy into.
Right.
So that has then created different kinds of suffering, lack of community, loss of relationships and things like that. So there's different consequences of that too. So.
Right. You know, in my own journey right now, you know, they 4 years ago they told me I had 2 years to live, and here I am in the bonus round, and I have no idea why. It's nothing that I've done. I don't think so. I know God answers prayers, but at the same time, why doesn't He answer every prayer? There's the flaw for me. There's the snag of the whole thing about, you know, suffering in God's activity. How involved is God actually in our lives in the midst of suffering? Other than, for me, His all-promised presence. Not the fix, but the presence.
What happened was I had an addiction form.
I think in the midst of some of my own experiences, I fight like mental gymnastics. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No, I don't. Okay. God, where are you? All that. But I do make the decision. It's got me. Let's just see what happens. Right.
Well, I was going to say, I think, obviously, you can't deny the scripture. There are all these scriptures that confirm this way of thinking. And what I've always found interesting is there's also just as many or more scriptures that talk about there's no reason for this. This person was born blind. They just were. But those aren't the scriptures that we focus on. And it's like, yes, there are, I hate the word consequences because we automatically go to the negative, but there is energy and reaction. There is consequence. There is a choice. There is a thing that happens. And sometimes life's just dog poop. And that's just, I mean, my sister didn't sin to get cystic fibrosis and to die. I didn't sin to get my diagnosis. And sometimes that is just, we live in a fallen world that has disease and imperfect bodies. And I just have always found it really interesting that we so hyper-focus on right now, but I mean collectively in the past, on these verses that reinforce this suffering is because you did something wrong or your faith isn't strong enough. And I'm like, there are just as many verses that counteract that, and they never get preached on.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, look at the life of Job. I mean, that story drives me crazy. You know, God just has this conversation with Satan and says, you know, take a look at my servant Job. Do what you want. And we all know what happens. But at the very end of the story, when Job is wanting some answers, what does he get? He gets reprimanded. Where were you when I hung the stars, cowboy? You know? And I thought, wow. So what do we learn in the midst of that? Well, there's a lot of things you can learn in that. People don't know what to do in the midst of that suffering. His friends, dude, just curse God and die. Whew, do us all a favor. You again. So yeah, it can be viewed as a test or a refinement. It wouldn't stop, but it was refreshing. It was cleansing. It was pure. There was a pureness to it as well. I don't know why that happened. But every time I start thinking about my own problems, my own pain, whatever your pains are, maybe you can share in some of the suffering of the world of God. Just think about his suffering for his entire creation. Yes?
Yeah, or you. I was going to say, many a lot of times what helps me is just remembering that the Son of God suffered.
Right. Yeah. No doubt.
In the Navajo tradition of prayer sweats that we were very blessed to be invited into, the purpose is to suffer for the sake of others. And the moment that you start thinking about yourself or how hot or the things that you are struggling with, it is unbearable. And yet when you are praying for somebody else, or we would go around and people would share the things that they want to pray for, that you were able to suffer for the sake of others and think of other people, it kind of mitigated the heat of it, so you were able to suffer for somebody else. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as hard as when you were like just being insular and
solo
on your own.
Yeah.
It's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And cleansing, like you're
sure.
saying, that's what made me think of that. You come out of having sweat for 45 minutes,
oh, yeah.
and you are the cleanest you have ever been.
Right.
Because it is just gone.
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, when you think about the prophets, there's not very many good stories about the prophets. Regarding their lives and the suffering that they endured for the word. Suffering and the righteous. You know, throughout the Psalms, you know, there is especially the agony and confusion of the righteous who suffer while the wicked prosper. There's that juxtaposition of why am I suffering, and this person over here living in the van down by the river is doing very well. Really healthy. So, you know, like I said, the prophets all suffer. I don't think there's really a story out there about the prophets that there wasn't suffering connected with their lives. Redemptive suffering in the New Testament. I wanted to talk just a little bit about Paul. He wore his suffering as a badge of honor. You think about it. What does he say? He says, twice I was shipwrecked. You know, three times they pulled my toenails out. I mean, it's this huge list of things that he suffered, and it almost makes you think that, yeah, if I suffer enough, then I'll have, I don't know, some kind of clout or some sort of respect in the midst of the community. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to be shipwrecked. I don't want to be beaten. I don't want to suffer. But hope in the midst of suffering, I believe, is not the end.
I think, speaking of Paul, like, I think we get this skewed idea of suffering where we confuse suffering with persecution.
Right.
Right? So speaking of Paul, like that is where, that's one of the reasons that's gotten us to where we are right now, especially in this country, with Christians believing that suffering for Christ, any slight against them is a persecution and a suffering. But in reality, we are confusing those two things. And so suffering is a space where you can come together as a community. Persecution is alone. You are like by yourself in that. Mm-hmm. And the individualist nature of all of us in America feeds into that.
Right.
Sorry.
No, that's good. Those are good words. You know, I think I think about the synoptic writers and their record of the Passion Week. The last week of Christ, you know, they don't skip And fast forward to the empty tomb. They pay attention to the suffering in great detail throughout the whole week, which then transitions to the hope of the tomb. So in the midst of suffering, I think it's helpful to realize that there is going to be an end. It may not be the one that you scripted for your life or for the lives of those around you. There will be an end, and there's hope in knowing that there's going to be some sort of comfort. I think in the midst of suffering, you are not distracted by anything. You are focused on that moment or those moments. Nothing else is distracting you. And it's hard to feel hope in those moments because you're not distracted. Nothing else kind of finds its way in. But that's just kind of the thing that I held on to the most, was the hope that this is not permanent. Now, it could have been. I don't know. But there is absolutely, I'll believe you this, there is really no answer. I want to go back to that. Yes?
Well, I can't help but think, why does God, why does somebody create something for suffering? Mm-hmm. It's going to suffer. You know, I don't create something that's going to cause suffering, you know, and that seems pretty hard to really grasp, isn't it?
Yeah.
That why would you create something that is ultimately going to cause suffering mm-hmm. to God, you know, when you were weeping, you know?
Yeah.
He sees something that we can't possibly see.
Right.
And you talked about our hope and what we can't see
right.
or possibly know what we'll get from suffering. But yeah, it's just mind-boggling to me that we create something that ultimately is going to suffer.
Yeah. Whee. It's a good one. I will say this as we find our way this week in the comments, is I think love. He loved us so much, knowing that there would be suffering, but he loved us so much and wants to be in a relationship so much that maybe that is something that outweighs the other. I don't know, but I cannot put my mind around what you're just saying. Now, does God get a bad rap for suffering? Maybe so. I don't know. Yes?
Concept of the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and to your point about being like very suffering, I think if we have that mindset of what the Trinity is, that relational nature of God,
mm-hmm.
and we practice it here with them, and the attempt to always include creation, I mean, not all attempt, but the reality is whether we recognize it or not, God is infused throughout the creation, right? So we are God infused if we recognize it. To your point, there, I don't think there's ever a time we're more alive or aware than we're suffering. It's very hard to be apathetic to something
mm-hmm.
when you're suffering. You're not allowed to shift in the neutral, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think to build a creation or God's infused in it. This is just, I think it's just a feature of it. If there's a reason, I think there is, it's because it's a feature of it. It's how we're designed. And this is just one of the extremes we go to. And we can find that extreme in any area of our lives.
Yeah.
Right? It's not all physical, it can be mental, it can be. It's just, we are keenly aware of loss. I think when we're healthy humans.
It's personal.
Yeah, that's it.
Go ahead, listen, and then we'll put a fork in this.
I wonder if it's not better to look at these and not as answers, because we're looking for the answer.
Sure.
And, you know, it might be which one's the best. What if they're just all responses
mm-hmm.
and reflections where there is
Right.
Or not.
Yes.
And that you find yourself in the limitations of being human, kind of like this.
Right.
And in the limitations of our humanity, we're seeking understanding.
Right.
Understanding, that's one of the phrases. And these are ways that people in our tradition have made meaning.
Yeah.
May not be the one that's going to help me in that moment or you, but it's a possible
right.
response to it. And I think that kind of ultimately beyond all of us, but in the midst of it, here's something that could help.
Right.
And so I think one of my concerns is that you get so anxious about getting that answer or being the right kind of person in the moment for another, that becomes a barrier. And so I feel like I'm going to make mistakes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to avoid you. As I'm afraid I'll hurt you or others.
Yeah.
So that you're able to kind of get past our limitations. One of the reasons I think we remain silent because that's the response.
Yeah. Yeah, just great words, Lewis. I think about the idea of just looking at all these as examples. These people, these examples, they're human beings doing the best they can in the midst of something they don't understand. And we get the privilege of just taking a look into their responses. And maybe learn from some of their mistakes as well. And that's why I think the conversation is so important. Because it's going to impact everybody in this room at some point, somewhere, or is happening now. One thing that I'll confess is I used to be that guy that'd say, just get it together. Enough. Right? But in my own journey, I have learned that I will never look down my nose at someone who suffered because I get it. I understand it. It's like a little boy that's afraid of a monster under his bed. You know it's not there, but he does. And so you don't know the journey that little guy is on. And so you step into that world, look under the bed, and journey with him. Thank you so much for your comments. Let's end with a prayer. Next week, we're going to step into the world of other faith traditions, how they use suffering. We're going to look at the mystics, how suffering has shaped a lot of their words, their thoughts, and their influences on us today. And we're going to continue to not answer the idea of suffering. Let's pray. Father, thank you for being our God. Thank you for community. Thank you that we can share our lives in a way that is meaningful, that's understanding. Give us the words when we need them, and let us be silent when there are no words. God bless our lives. Thank you for your Son, Jesus. For it's through his name that I pray. Amen. I am here. I am here.
However, it also illustrates the vanity of the guest in Jesus' parable. those who think too highly of themselves and sit themselves in places of honor around a banquet table. This piece and the biblical passages prompt us to consider the consequences of forgetting our place in the world, both in relation to God and in relation to others. And then also, as is our practice, we're going to spend about 60 seconds in silent contemplation here. So take this time to kind of be in your prayerful space to practice that communion with God and with ourselves and with one another. And again,